Well, it's good to see you guys. Glad you're here today. Hey, we're going to continue our series. We're titling Fighting Fair. And last week, we did something really cool on all three of our campuses. We had different panels that were presenting the message. And so you guys got to hear from the Websters and the Claytons, and then also from the one and only Tanya Whitaker. And so what a cool treat that was to really just kind of take what we'll call a bird's eye view over this idea of conflict in relationships and in marriage. And so what I want to do today is I want to try to drill down a little bit further. I want to almost kind of pick up where they left off last week. And we want to get a little bit more practical today. Now, I think all of us understand that in every game, every sport, for the most part, there are rules, right? Is that fair to assume? There's some type of rule. You could say MLB, NBA, MLS, whatever you want, UFC, whatever sport, hopscotch, I mean, whatever you want to list, right? Every game has some type of rules. But what's interesting is when you really think about relationships and when you think about marriage in particular, for most couples, we don't necessarily have, maybe not all of us, a list of rules that we put in play when we're in the middle of an argument. Most of it is just a kind of a free-for-all based on how we're feeling, the emotions, the intensity of the event that led to that conflict. And so if we're not careful, sometimes it can get really out of hand. What often happens is it becomes very unproductive conflict. Or maybe worse, it becomes more like dirty fighting, almost like the gloves come off, if you remember our boxing analogy. And that's what we really want to avoid. But if you've played a lot of games, you also know that it's not really great to add rules in the middle of a game. You ever tried that before? My wife and I love playing games, board games, card games, you name it. The problem is my wife is kind of the rule follower, and she's the rule police. And so sometimes she'll accidentally, of course, forget to tell us about a few of the rules that she read at the beginning of the game. And so you get into the game and things are going well and likely you're winning. And then all of a sudden a rule pops up and you go, oh, how convenient that now I can't play that card on top of that card, even though it looks like I should be able to, right? And so when you add rules in the middle of a game, even if it was really instituted before, we just didn't talk about it, it can feel a bit jarring. Well, in the same idea, what we don't want to do is try to establish rules while we're in the middle of an argument. We want to try to get ahead of it and say, hey, if we understand that you and I in marriage being different, having different worldviews, I mean, we see things differently, all these different things, not to mention that we're just broken people. If we know conflict is coming, maybe we should plan to create some boundaries to help us when we have conflict, or maybe when that conflict leads to fighting, we can do it in a way that's fair, that's productive, that actually gets us somewhere, that possibly instead of being divided over it, we might actually grow through it. We might actually grow more together through it. And so we're going to get real practical today. Isn't that exciting? Doesn't that just pump you up? Doesn't really matter because you can't leave now. By the way, I just want to say I'm really proud of y'all. After you didn't win the rodeo tickets, I thought there'd be at least 10 people that just walk out like, all right, we came here for that. That's it. And none of that happened, or at least I didn't see it. So I'm so glad that you're here. Now, here's what we're going to do to kind of put this in our minds so we can all be on the same page. I'm going to give you a scenario of a potential fight that could happen in someone's marriage. Now, this is hypothetical. If it is your story, we can talk afterwards, but maybe we'll help you solve it here tonight together, okay? So here's this scenario. You can kind of follow along. First, there's a husband, hypothetical husband. And he goes out and purchases a $249 pickleball paddle. In that purchase, he realizes it's an expensive purchase. He also remembers that they're not necessarily in the most loose budget season of their marriage or of their life. And so he decides, hey, my wife probably won't understand how important I need to have this pickleball paddle for the tournament that's coming up this weekend, right? Hypothetical, of course. And so the husband decides, I'm just going to keep it from her until the time's right. Now, I know none of you in here would ever do something like this. But just in case, let's keep going. Meanwhile, while the husband is on his mission to secretly purchase this paddle, something else happens. His wonderful wife is out, and she decides, hey, the rodeo is right around the corner. In fact, at church, you can't show up without boots. So she's at the store, just so happens to end up at the boot store, and she goes, I'm looking around, and I see these amazing, I don't know if that's how much they actually cost, but it sounded good, all right? So she purchases $315 Western boots, but like her husband, she remembers, oh, budget's a little tight. He's probably not going to understand how amazing these boots are, once-in-a-lifetime deal. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, she's convinced, and so she too decides, I'm just going to keep it from him until maybe we end up at the rodeo, and then he looks down and sees them, and maybe he'll think they're beautiful, and then he's just going to forgive me, and it's going to be great. I don't know why you're laughing. That could happen. That could happen. So they both try to hide it from each other. But there's one more piece. The budget is a problem. They both know that, and yet they make their purchase. Now, in our story, hypothetically, of course, guess what happens? They both find out about each other's purchases the very day. Newsflash. Don't try that. It's not going to work. They always find out. They come home. She's got her boots out. He's got his pickleball paddle. They both failed because they should have been hiding them, but that's a different story. And they see each other and they go, are you kidding me? And they get mad at each other for purchasing these items knowing that the budget was tight. Okay, now again, this is a hypothetical. This would never happen with any of us. But let's just roll with this scenario. Let's kind of keep it in the back of our mind as we work through some ways that we might want to navigate conflict. Now, again, what I want to do today is I don't want to list out 13 rules that I think you should follow when it comes to conflict in marriage. I don't think that would be wise. So what I would like to do is I'm going to lay out some things that I think could be helpful, but I'm going to allow you within your marriages or within your relationships, or if you're a single, maybe it's just a chance to jot some stuff down and be thinking ahead. But I want you to kind of cipher through as we're talking today, and I want you to think about the things that you feel might be helpful to institute as some guardrails, some boundaries within conflict, so that you don't tear each other apart, but rather we can get to resolution. So like I said, I'm not going to give 13, but I'm going to give you three categories, and they're going to look like this. In every conflict, this is typically what's going to happen. There's going to be a time when you get to talk, there's going to be a time when you need to stop, and then there's going to be a time when it's going to be your spouse's opportunity to speak. By the way, we have a typo here, but I'll fix it in just a second. First thing is, when it's your turn, we're going to speak up. I'm going to give you a couple thoughts that I want you to think about as you're sharing your side in the conflict. I think these are going to be helpful. The second is, when it's time to be done, it's supposed to say, shush up. But I guess they didn't like that. They thought it was mean. It could have been shut up, but I edited that to a more family-friendly. But the point is, we're going to be quiet when it's our time because we're going to hand it over. And then finally, when it's their turn, we want to listen up. So I'm going to give you a couple thoughts in each one of these that I encourage you to just kind of listen carefully and see which ones you think could be helpful, because I think these can be really, really helpful for all of us. So let's start with the first one. We're going to talk about when it's your turn, when it's time to speak up. Here's some things we might want to consider implementing to make sure we can move forward in conflict. Here's the first one. The first one is this: speak to heal, not to wound. Speak to heal, not to wound. Now, for most of us, I think it's safe to assume that we know that our words can really do two things. They can either be deadly weapons, or they can be helpful. They can bring life, right? Has someone ever come to you and just given you just that great compliment, and you just go, man, I felt so encouraged. I felt so uplifted, right? But then that same person could come to you at another time and just criticize you, maybe for something you didn't agree with, or maybe something you didn't like, and it just felt like they cut you down. Words are powerful. In fact, Proverbs confirms this for us. This is a familiar verse. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And so as we think about entering into conflict, knowing that words are going to be such a key instrument in getting to resolution, it's so important that we remember the power of our words. We can think of it like this. Words are like a knife. In the hand of a soldier, they might be used to wound, but a knife in the hand of a surgeon is used to heal. And so as we enter into conflict, it might be wise for you to make some decisions ahead of time of some things you're not going to say. some places you're not going to go. Example might be, hey, we're just going to decide. I'm going to avoid name calling and I'm going to avoid personal attacks when we're trying to deal with conflict. Whenever that happens, we end up taking our focus off the actual problem and we put it on aggression at each other. That is using words to wound rather than to heal. Now, this is pretty basic. So maybe for some of us, we just don't do this in general. So for you, it might be a different angle. But the first thing we have to remember is the power of our words. And we want to make sure that we go into conflict thinking about, I want to use my words to move us toward healing with this issue rather than to add more wounds to the problem. Now, the second thing we want to focus on is, and again, these are just thoughts for you to consider, is to be of few words. How many of you have a spouse that talks too much? I'm just kidding, don't raise your hand. I would never do that to you. Some of you, I got you though. Be of few words. There's another verse in Proverbs that's helpful for us. Look at this. Proverbs 10:19 says, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Now, I want to be careful here. This isn't saying that you should never speak up. That's not what it's saying at all. But instead, we want to be thoughtful with our words. And we also want to note that the more we talk, the more trouble we can potentially get in. Am I the only one that it's this way? The more long-winded I get, I end up saying something stupid every time. Or I say something in a way that I might describe as stupid, right? So this isn't about not talking. It's more about thinking strategically before we speak. And the less words we use, the more effective we can be at this. My wife, Sarah, used to do a really great illustration when she was speaking, particularly to students. And what she would do is she'd bring two students up on the stage. She'd put a table in the middle. She'd give them each a tube of toothpaste. And she'd say, okay, I want you to squeeze out the toothpaste as fast as you can. The first one to get it done wins, okay? And of course, they'd both finish usually about the same time. And then she'd say, okay, now here's the tiebreaker. I want you to take the toothpaste, and I want to see who can get it back in the tube the fastest. And we all know what happened. None of them could ever do it, right? Why? This idea that, man, once those words come out, it's so difficult to bring them back in. It's so difficult to reel back the hurt that comes with that. But if we would just slow down, realize that, hey, less words, more thoughtful, more heart, saves more pain. It gives us a chance to move toward resolution rather than to enhance the pain of the conflict that's at hand. And so you might want to think about making a pattern for you that is less words, more thoughtful, usually comes with taking more time to process before you speak. But then here's the third one. When necessary, say it again. Some of us, and this is me, speak really, really fast. In fact, it's something I've had to continue to work on just as a communicator. I get excited and I start speaking fast and I hope that you can keep up because I'm thinking that you're gonna be engaged because you're following along and you get it? Some of you are that way too. Some of you speak really, really fast and when you're passionate, oh, you might speak 1,000 words a minute. I don't know if that's a good number, but it sounds high to me. And so you're just going, ba 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 ba. Sounds like a machine gun. I wasn't planning that, but it could feel that way to your spouse. And so you're talking so fast that your spouse has lost all sense of what you were trying to say because you're a mile ahead of where you were in the conversation. Or maybe there's some other variables. Maybe there's some language barriers. Maybe there's all these different things that could be. And so the point is sometimes it's not a bad idea to institute a rule or, hey, a principle that when my spouse starts talking and I am not catching on to what they're saying. I know this sounds so simple, but it can be so helpful. We have a rule that it's okay to say, hey, do you mind pausing for just a second? Let's dial that back because I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, but I'm having a hard time following. Now, that sounds a lot better than, you just sound crazy. You're just rambling all night long. I have no idea what you're saying. You're probably totally wrong. See the difference? And so when you institute these kind of rules, it helps us to create these boundaries that help us. And so for Sarah, she's constantly having to say, okay, whoa, 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 slow down. I really want to hear what you're saying because I want to solve this, but I'm having a hard time keeping up. Sometimes I just get abstract. I think it makes sense in my head, but what comes out and what's in here don't line up, right? That could be you too. So it might be worth thinking about when it's time for you to speak to realize that you might need to just slow down, pump the brakes, be really clear. Why? Because we want to get to resolution. We want to eliminate the things that make that conflict more intense. Okay, so let's move to the second phase. Now, the second phase is there's going to come a part when it, there it is. Good job, guys. When it's time to be done, shush up. I really like shut up, but I just think it wasn't appropriate. Okay, when it's time to be done, shush up. Some of us just need to know that there is literally, name one game, there's probably one, so don't do it. Name one game, though, where one person goes while all the other opponents just watch, and that person is the only one that goes for the whole game. Right? In every game, there is a transition of turn. We like to think of it as passing the dice. When your turn's done, you pass the dice to the next person on. But guess what? Sometimes in our conflicts, particularly in marriage, we're not very good at passing the dice. We're really good about just keeping on going. And so that comment then became a speech that then became a filibuster, if you know what that is. And eventually your spouse is like, I'm out because I haven't even had a chance to share. And you go, well, what relationship does this? Surely they go back and forth and everybody talks, but you'd be surprised how many relationships struggle because remember what we talked about in week one, if you were here, some of us don't mind the fight, but some of us tend to back away. The ones that tend to back away tend to say less, and it's very possible that the over-aggressive person can take over the one that's more likely to step back and could miss their chance to actually be able to speak up. And you can see how this could continue to build and build and build and to lead to massive conflict. Think about two-way radio, if you're familiar with those. Whenever you're done speaking into a two-way radio, what do you say? At the end, you say something like the word over. And the idea is, hey, I finished. Now the transmission goes to you. But imagine if you're talking on a two-way radio, you said over, and then you go, oh, wait, I thought of one more thing, and you just immediately start speaking again. Well, what happened is both people would speak over each other, and it would become a mess. But not only would it become a mess, words would be missed that should have been said. And this is what happens so often in our conflicts as we're trying to resolve it. We end up not getting to hear everything that we were trying to say to each other. There's these big holes, which leads to bigger conflict. And so as we're navigating this, there has to be an opportunity where we pass the dice, where we transition to our spouse. And then guess what happens? It's the easiest one of all. You ready? That was a joke. When it's their turn, we listen. Some of you are like, feel like we're in grade school. I get it. But this can be the hardest one, especially when we're passionate about something. When you're looking at your spouse who just bought that $249 stinking pickleball paddle for no reason. Is that going to make you a better player? Because I don't think you're good, period. By the way, don't say those things. That's why you're in conflict, okay? But we can, our minds, right, can start to race and, oh, it can be crazy. When we get to this place, we've got to be able to listen. I want to share some things I think could be helpful. First, James 1 through 9 says this. We used this last week. I thought this was so great. Everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. I love what Tanya said. She said, quick, slow, slow. It was almost like you were dancing. Quick, slow, slow. Those of you that are going to the rodeo, if you end up two-stepping, try it that way. Quick, slow, slow. Your husband would be like, are we fighting or are we dancing? I'm not sure. Quick, slow, slow. The idea is, man, we want to, first thing is to listen and then to speak. First thing to listen and then to speak. Now, with this one, there's a difference between active listening and passive listening. Okay, it looks like this. Active listening, or effective listening is active, not passive. Let me show you what this looks like broken down. Let's go to the next slide. Passive listening is hearing, but not really listening. And there's a difference, right? Think of it like this. You're tuning them out, but you're letting them talk. And they're just, and some of you are like, who does this? Probably the person sitting next to you, just so you know. So they're talking and you're just tuning them out, like some of you are doing to me right now. Just tuning them out, right? Thinking about something else, right? But this is a real thing. Here's the other piece of this that happens. Some of us, and I understand you because I'm you, you're just waiting for your turn. You're listening to go, Okay, me, my turn. Listen, I got to tell you, right? And so we want to be so careful that if we're talking about in marriage and we're talking about building each other up, we're talking about coming together in unity as God designed for marriage to be, we're talking about moving toward resolution, passive hearing is never going to work. We've got to be at a place where we're leaning in. So what does it look like? Well, it's active listening. It's listening where you're listening carefully to what they're saying. You're interacting with them, right? Might be some head nods, might be some, yes, babe, oh, that's good. I'm just kidding, don't do that. That would sound fake. But it's like, yes, oh, yeah, I understand that. Tell me more about that. Don't do that all the time, by the way. But hey, tell me more about that. Okay, whoa, hold on. Slow down. Okay, I don't know if I understand that. Can you explain that to me a little bit more? Because I do want to understand how the pickleball paddles, the bigger deal than the boots, right? I'm giving you hypotheticals. But we dig in a little bit, we slow down, but we're actually paying attention. Why? Because we want to help. We want to get to resolution. We want to understand. And this requires energy, it requires focus, and sometimes it requires endurance. This is why, as we've been saying, that conflicts have to be dealt with at the right time, in the right temperature, right? The right emotional state. They're not solved all the time. You pick the right time and the right place and then the right temperature, the right emotional state so that you can actually do this and it be effective. I want to give you one more thing and then I want to show you a passage of scripture that I think is going to help us bring all this home. For those of us in here, and I know because of the way our church is, how diverse we are, this is very common. For those of you that may be married to someone from a different culture, I want to introduce you to something really quick, but I think it'll be helpful for all of us. And it's this. Sometimes we need to listen. Throw this up, but we need to listen for what's not being said. So believe it or not, every person leans one way or the other. They either lean to a high context conversation or a low context conversation. Let me put it up on the screen for you so you can see it kind of broken down. A low context is what we would describe as a verbal communicator. So when you speak, you say what you mean and you mean what you say. The cultures that typically line up with this are Asian, Middle Eastern, Latin America. So if you come from one of those nations, then typically, culturally speaking, you tend to be low context, verbal communicators, say what you mean what you say. The other side is the high context, more nonverbal communication, which is watch what I do and what I say. By the way, this is an error on the slides here. Apologize. These are flipped. So the high contexts are actually the, would you go back to that slide really quick? I want to show you all this the right way. So our high contexts are our Asian, Middle Eastern, and Latin American cultures. And then flip that on the next side. The high context is actually flipped around. The point is, there are some of us, particularly for us Americans, we just say it. We're very direct. And so other cultures can really almost be offended by this because they come from a different perspective. They come from where what you say does matter, but how you say it matters even more. Your nonverbal communication can be just as effective as your verbal communication. And so for those of us that particularly are married to someone from a different culture, especially if you come from these two different sides, this is something you really want to pay attention to because you can come across way more, and this is great for people that you work with as well. If they come from a high context and you come from a low context or vice versa, if you're not careful, you can really come off to each other in a really negative way, but culturally, it's just how you were raised. So a little something I just wanted to add in there because I know how diverse our church is. I think this is so important to have a grip on. Now, here's what I want to show you, okay? Bring this all together. Why is this so important? What does all of this mean for us when it comes to marriage? How is conflict in God's eyes resolved? What do we do with all this? I want to show you one set of verses that I think is tremendously helpful, and it comes from Genesis 2:24, and this is what it says. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Now the man and his wife were both naked, but they felt no shame. Let's leave this on here for just a second. This is so important in the context of conflict and marriage, and here's why. In this verse, as God was instituting marriage and essentially giving us some instruction on what it could look like, he highlights two things that are so important for us to understand. Whether you're married or you're single and going to be married one day, you must understand this. In God's eyes of marriage, there are two things that jump out at the forefront. It's unity and safety. Unity and safety. The first thing here is he says, I've taken two, I've united them into one. Now we understand that physically, but that's emotionally and intellectually and spiritually as well. He's merging these two lives together. In the context of marriage, God designs for you and your spouse to be closer than any other human relationship on the planet. That's the unity. But then the second piece is it says, and you might not catch this when you first read it. Now the man and his wife were both naked, but they felt no shame. Now, of course, they were naked and didn't feel shame. But the idea here is a little bit deeper than just sin hasn't entered yet and they felt uncomfortable looking across the way. What it's saying here is that there was nothing to be ashamed of. There were no secrets. There were no hidden pockets. To these two, everything was revealed and everything was safe. This is so difficult because we live in a broken world, but I want you to hear this. In your marriages, God has designed it that you would create the safest place possible for your spouse. That they would be free enough to share any secret that they have, that they can speak openly with you, that they feel safe around you, that if everyone in the world is picking on them, they know that you can be the safe place for them. God designed it so that you would have a companion to do life with, to build you up even when the world's trying to tear you down, to hold you up when the weight becomes too much to bear. This is the beauty of marriage that God designed, united into one, but in a place that's safe unlike any relationship on the planet. And this is why conflict, though it's inevitable, it's going to happen because of so many different reasons. But at the same time, it should be something that we want to lean into, to work through so that we can grow through it together. God's desire is unity, not division. And so as married couples, this has got to be something we aim for. I want to draw close with my spouse. I don't want anything to get in between us, the very best that I can. And this is why solving conflict is so important. It should be something we look for rather than something we repel from. We are going to get frustrated at each other. Your spouse is going to buy that stupid pickleball paddle sometimes and you're going to be so frustrated, but you want to get to a place. I hope you'll get to this place where you say, listen, I can't believe you did that. Do you have the receipt? We can still take it back. But listen, I love you and I love us and I think our budget's important. Let's come together and let's figure out what happened and let's see, could we make this work? Because God's desire is unity. I want to share with you two rules that Sarah and I have. I'm not saying you need these rules in your life, but I share them with you just briefly. Sarah and I have created two rules for our marriage that trump all other rules. It's two things. Number one, we never threaten divorce. In fact, for her and I, we've never used that word in a context of a fight or an argument or a threat. That's just something we decided early on, hey, if that happens with you, there's no judgment. I'm just saying for us, this we just decided, man, we're not going to do that. I don't want that word to create you feeling unsafe, create you feeling like this thing could break apart. So we've kept that word out, but particularly in conflict and fighting, we never threatened to leave. We never threatened divorce. That's something we decided early on. And I can tell you now, 13 years in, it has really served us well because it's never a thought, no matter how bad the conflict is, that we're just going to end this thing. The thought is, no matter what, we're going to figure it out. It may take a minute, but we're going to get there. The second thing is, and again, these are ours, maybe not for you, but for us, we decided, hey, we are never going to curse at each other. We're never going to curse at each other. Now, have we stubbed our toe, sliced a finger, said a word or two we regret? Of course. But when we are fighting, when we are in conflict, we just made the rule, we will never curse at each other. And we try to extend that into, we're just not going to attack each other like that. Let's attack the problem, not each other, so that we can move through conflict. These are our two rules. I lay them out to you, but I want you to see them. They come from that verse, that I want to create a safe place for my wife where she's not worried about ever being alone. I've got her back, and she is safe to deal with these things with me. And then I also want her to know that being united, I don't want anything to divide us. So I don't want to speak to her in a way where she feels like I'm pulling away. So that's for us. Maybe that's helpful for you. But the hope tonight was that you might listen to some of these things and think, what could be helpful for us? You know how you fight. You know what your conflicts are. You know what you wrestle with. And maybe some of these can be tremendously helpful to keep some barriers so that you can keep moving forward and stay united together, which we know is God's desire. We're praying for your marriages, particularly if you're in a conflict right now. If you bought a pickleball paddle today, I'm so sorry. If you bought boots today, I'm so sorry. But if you talk it out, I am sure there is a way you can make it work. Let me pray first.